This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the continuing fight against the COVID virus and particularly the Delta variant, which is very, very infectious, goes on. Just when people declare some kind of victory, a statistic that is troubling arises. In Germany, for example, the day before yesterday, which is actually Sunday, they had the biggest number of infections ever. And in Austria, the number of infections doubled in 3 days. In Ireland, we had 3,161 new cases of infection yesterday. That's the seventh successive day when the number has been over 3,000. But we also had 78 people in intensive care units, 520 in hospital. And there were only 15 ICU beds free after COVID matters were taken into account. So when one considers all the other non-COVID waiting lists and terrible needs for health, we're still in a very, very serious situation. And it's a pleasure to welcome Professor Paul Moyna from Maynooth University. Professor Moyna is Professor of Immunology. Paul, the battle against this virus continues, and there has been one very notable victory, which we'll come on to, which is an antiviral drug that is very promising and comes in the form of a pill. But for example, the shortage of ICU beds in Ireland yesterday, 15 down to only 15, would be troubling if we were to get more cases.
I think it would, Eamon. As you mentioned, the level of transmission in the community is very high. We've over 3,000 cases now for a number of days, number of weeks. Probably the good news story, if there is one, is that the level of hospitalization and ICU admissions, it has stabilized somewhat despite these really high numbers. And I think that is testament to how well the vaccine is working. We've heard, and we'll probably chat about, you know, these breakthrough infections.
Yes.
The vaccine is providing very strong protection against serious illness and hospitalization. If you were to cast your mind back this time last year, if we were looking at, on a sustained basis, over 3,000 cases per day, we would be in a very, very serious situation, especially in terms of overrun of hospitals. And whereas the vaccine is giving us that wall of protection, you did mention in terms of burden on the health system, I think that's a very real burden. Probably reflects long-term in terms of, like, each winter, it's almost like the health system is sort of on a knife edge in terms of, and a lot of it is due to things like these respiratory viruses. Add on top of that now, COVID-19 and this Delta variant that transmits really well, that puts even additional pressure on. So obviously we need to do everything we can to try to reduce the burden on the health system. And I think if you look at the profile of people and individuals ending up in hospital and in ICU, some of them, a sizable proportion of them, are unvaccinated. So again, if we can continue to try to encourage, some of them I think cannot be reached, but some I think may have genuine anxieties, may have questions. I think it's good to ask those questions, deserve answers to them, but to try to reassure them, you know, with objective data, to try to get more vaccinated. But then there are also many who are vaccinated, and that's that they are these breakthrough infections, and in some cases they will develop into illness that requires hospitalization, sometimes very serious illness. But I think one of the really good things there is we've rolled out the booster program initially for the over 80s, now for the over 60s. And if you look at many of the people who've been vaccinated who've ended up in hospital, they tend to be with those risk factors such as age and obesity. And now those individuals are going to get and are being targeted for the booster program. And again, that will now give added protection to them, because what happens in breakthrough infections, your antibodies wane, and so you become a little bit more susceptible to getting infected, even though you still have immunological memory that will protect you from, in most cases, getting very seriously ill. But what the booster program will do and the booster vaccines will do is to increase the amount of antibodies you have, especially in your bloodstream. Some of that will get into your respiratory system, and that will actually give you added protection from infection, because obviously the ultimate protection is to stop you from getting the virus in the first place. So I think that will, and very quickly, the really good thing about the booster vaccines is that the effects are very, very fast. Within 1 or 2 weeks, you'll see those antibodies being elevated really high. And we've seen this already in Israel, where a mass booster program has been rolled out. You see their cases dropping, you know, very, very rapidly. So I think with the booster program, if we can get some more of the unvaccinated and encourage them to get vaccinated, I think that will help us very significantly in terms of reducing the burden on the health system. And obviously, as well, we want to reduce the transmission in the community as well. But in terms of data translating into serious illness, hospitalization, I think there are some of the things that will help in terms of achieving that.
Now, this afternoon, there's a meeting between the government and the hospitality industry, because it has emerged, and it's quite a frightening figure, really, that in certain parts of the hospitality industry, pubs in particular, I think, 37% of people were not asked for proof that they had been vaccinated. They weren't asked for their vaccination certificate. The government is meeting with the hospitality industry, whose leaders all say they totally disapprove of this, and of course they want to be compliant. But it's a big number, and the question of our compliance, particularly in Ireland, in a small place, and particularly perhaps in rural Ireland, is extremely difficult, isn't it? But if we slip up on that, it's going to be very serious in terms of infections.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we and I've been very supportive in terms of trying to open up as much as possible whilst trying to mitigate, you know, the risks associated with that. But we need to use every tool that we have, and vaccination gives us really good protection. And it doesn't completely stop transmission, but it certainly reduces transmission for a number of reasons. First of all, you're vaccinated, you're less likely to get infected. So that's the first point in terms of reducing transmission. But even if you get infected, viral loads can get very high. But because you've been vaccinated, you clear the virus more quickly. So you're less likely to transmit over a sustained period of time. So certainly vaccination protects against transmission. Doesn't stop it, but certainly reduces. So with that knowledge, it's really important then that, yeah, we get better compliance. And I think the industry as a whole, and you mentioned some of the comments coming up from the leadership of that sector,
yes,
saying that, you know, should be zero tolerance, and that any establishments that don't comply with this should be closed down. And so I think compliance is absolutely essential in order to get the effectiveness of that. Absolutely. I think I would agree with that.
Now, in the schools, antigen testing, according to the Taoiseach yesterday, will be brought into the schools. Antigen testing has been a matter of dispute, hasn't it, between experts as well as for teachers. The teachers' unions have been advocating the use of antigen testing. But the schools are a very special case, and some of the situations are very, very troubling indeed. Apparently 5,000 primary school children have got this disease, and teachers in particular feel vulnerable. What's your view on this idea that we should have antigen testing, particularly in the schools?
So first of all, I think we should use it. I think it's a really important tool that we have that we've chosen for whatever reason not to use. So public health has shown a reticence, a reluctance to embrace rapid antigen testing. And some of this criticism has been that it isn't very good in terms of picking up asymptomatic people. Now, again, I think that's the wrong focus. I think if you look at rapid antigen testing, the comparison has been made with PCR. But PCR can pick up cases even long after the person being infectious. If instead you look at, is the person infectious or not infectious, antigen tests are really, really good. They've sensitivity up, in some cases, 80 to 90%. So really, really high. If you look at the present situation, Eamon, in schools where you have close contacts that are asymptomatic, basically nothing is happening there in terms of contact tracing or in terms of trying to limit the potential for virus to be spread via those contacts. Yet we have this tool that can pick up 80 to 90% of infectious cases, but we've chosen not to use it. And again, that just does not make any sense to me at all. So again, something for the last number of months that I thought would make complete sense would be for, even in schools where currently you're not using anything for close contacts, why not give antigen tests to the children, to their parents, and the children to test maybe every other day for a week after close contact. And in that case then, if the antigen test reports a negative test, we'll then let the children go into school. Because I think one of the concerns was that children were being kept away from school for long time yes. periods. Whereas with the antigen testing then gives an informed decision in terms of saying, okay, there doesn't seem to be infectious level of virus here, so the child can go into school. Whereas currently we're not doing anything at all. So I think this can only help.
Yeah, and according to the government statistics, 1 in 6 people testing positive in the last month has been a primary school child. And the potential there, if it isn't to some extent mitigated or controlled, is that those infected children will go back out into their own community and perhaps infect their parents or vulnerable relatives or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And some of these children are in multi-generational housings. And so
yes.
certainly there is, you know, potential risk there. And I think NEF have gone to great lengths to say that they don't see schools as particular sites for, you know, very high levels of transmission. But I think it has to be said that children do transmit, maybe not quite as much as parents. It's very difficult. You see contrasting reports on that. But I think it's not logical or sensible to think that no transmission takes place in the school setting. Certainly does, some does. And children then, if they transmit that outdoor in the community, and we know that most of the transmission taking place actually is within households. So if you have children bringing that into households, you will have onward transmission in the household. So anything we can do, Eamon, to identify, you know, individuals, whether children, adults, that have infectious levels of the virus, it again allows you to make an informed decision in terms of, yes, you should isolate and try to reduce transmission in that way. Whereas currently we have that tool, we've chosen not to use it. And again, it's a mystery to me as to why we haven't.
I want to ask you about the international situation, in particular Germany and China. China now has a real problem, despite having at its disposal any weapon in terms of lockdown or restriction that it chooses to use. And it has chosen to use some extreme measures. Indeed, it did in the original outbreak in Wuhan to clear it. Germany also with a good, strong public health service. And they have, per 100,000 people, they have 201 infections for every 100,000 people when it was counted 48 hours ago, which is a very high number indeed. Is it down to this Delta variant and its transmissibility and how difficult it is to say we've got it?
I think there's a number of factors there, Eamon. I think it's multifactorial, and I think it's always very difficult if you make comparisons between countries at a single point in time.
Right.
I think it's very difficult to make a comparison. So if you look at Seasonality, for example. I think that's a major factor, and one that probably from an Irish point of view and in terms of public health here in Ireland, that it doesn't seem to have been an emphasis in terms of the potential for seasonality to play into that and affect the transmission. Something else I think that's very important, if you look at the UK had very high numbers. They're beginning to come down now. But a lot of those numbers, I think, was due to breakthrough infections, because the UK was very early in terms of rolling out their vaccination program. And then we began to see these breakthrough infections about maybe 4, 5, 6 months after vaccination. So some of the countries now, we were a little bit offset from the UK. Some of the countries that were rolled out the vaccine program a little bit later than the UK, I think some of those countries, including Germany, will begin to see these breakthrough infections now coming through, which probably emphasizes the need now and the value of the booster program. So a variety of factors there that, whereas now, Eamon, you may be talking about a country that's doing very well, whereas maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, that country could be going through a very tough spell. So it's very difficult. So I think you have to look over a broader time frame rather than single time points.
Now, we learned within the last 24 hours, although we've known for some time, but it was confirmed, if you like, that there is an antiviral drug that can be taken in the form of a pill, and it is produced by Pfizer. So can you tell us, Paul, exactly, this sounds like a game changer in that it takes the vaccination and vaccine factor out of the equation. How important could this be, and what exactly is it?
Yeah, I think it could be very important, Eamon. So first of all, just to say that so the data we've seen so far has been released by Pfizer, so it's a press release. So obviously we need to see the data in more detail, and we will see that when it goes for regulatory approval. But certainly the data that has come out, in my view, seems very, very encouraging. And I think this could have very significant impact if it turns out and it translates in the real world to be as effective. I think it could have a very significant impact in conjunction with vaccines, not as an alternative to vaccines, in conjunction, complements the vaccines to bring the pandemic under control. So what is it, Eamon? It's actually the first drug that we have that has been designed to target something specifically in the SARS coronavirus 2 that causes COVID-19. So if you think of the virus is a very simple structure, Eamon. It consists of genetic material called RNA, and then 29 proteins, and that's what the virus is.
Yeah.
When it gets inside our cells, it needs to replicate. So you need to replicate the RNA, and then you also need to make those viral proteins. The proteins are initially produced as very large proteins, and they need to be chopped into smaller proteins. And that is done by a protein called a protease. And this drug called Paxlovid from Pfizer was designed to specifically stop that protease from chopping up those large viral proteins into the smaller proteins that would assemble into the virus.
Right.
So essentially what it does is it stops the virus from replicating. So it's important that you get it very early on. In the trials, they looked at studies where the drug was administered within 3 or 5 days from symptom onset. And what they found was these were given to people, confirmed cases, and cases, importantly, that would have some of the risk factors that one would associate with developing severe COVID, ending up in hospital and ICU. So, for example, age, obesity, these type of risk factors. So what was shown was that up almost 90% protection from hospitalization, just like 89% from hospitalization. In the trial, there were 10 deaths. All of them were in the placebo, the control group, none in the drug group. So that's really very, very striking. Importantly then, Eamon, it's an oral drug. It can be taken, probably prescribed by your GP. So the idea here is that you present with symptoms, have a test, show you have COVID-19, take this drug probably over, I'd say, a 5-7 day time period. And the idea there, it would stop hospitalizations, stop obviously, and that would reduce the burden on the health system. So it's not a situation where it would replace the vaccines, that old adage of, prevention is better than cure. Yes. It certainly still applies. But we know we have breakthrough infections post-vaccines. Some of those breakthrough infections will develop into cases of hospitalization, ICU admissions. But with this drug, potentially, then you have this additional tool that will stop many of those, 90% hopefully of those, progressing then into serious illness. So that, in conjunction with the vaccine, could be very, very powerful in terms of bringing this pandemic under control. There have been many trials up to this stage, Eamon, looking at some of the antivirals, some of the existing antivirals, and they haven't worked really at all. Whereas this one was specifically designed with this virus in mind. And again, fantastic achievement to have done this over such a short time period. So just related to that, Eamon, there's another drug as well, a drug called Molnupiravir, produced by a company called Merck. And the UK actually licensed that and approved that last week also for treatment of SARS-CoV-2. And again, like the Paxlovid, it's an antiviral drug. Works in a slightly different way. Instead of targeting this protease that chops the proteins into smaller proteins for viral assembly, this actually stops the RNA from replicating itself. But again, it's an antiviral drug. It stops the virus from replicating. Very good results there as well. Reduces hospitalization in high-risk cases by 50%. So very significant. And you could potentially down the road, because with all these drugs, the risk always is that maybe, you know, resistance develops and you have variants. But for example, if we look at other cases like HIV, how we treat HIV, there is no vaccine.
Yes.
We've got cocktails of antiviral drugs. And we use a cocktail because it prevents the virus from mutating and becoming resistant. And potentially, you could have a situation where you possibly could see a combination of these drugs being used to treat SARS-CoV-2, because that reduces the risk of resistant strains developing, because it would be very unlikely for a viral strain to be able to mutate so that it's resistant to multiple drugs at the same time. So I think lots of hope there, Eamon. You know, so far, there's been very little success with antiviral drugs, but these are two cases, two examples now where we're making serious inroads and combined, complementing what the vaccine program has achieved. I think we could be entering a phase now where we're very seriously, in a meaningful way, looking at trying to bring the pandemic under control.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yes, and one of the aspects of this that because of our human nature, maybe we haven't talked much about, but it's very important, is outside of Europe, outside of the first world, there are masses of people in the third world who have neither the financial or indeed even the medical means to access vaccines. Would this antiviral drug be a help in that regard? And because it is true, isn't it, that none of us are safe while all of those people out there are not cared for as well. And it's incumbent on the First World to make sure that people everywhere on Earth can access treatment and wherever possible that it should be made available.
Yeah, really, really, really important point there, Eamon. And like this is a global problem. So yes. A couple of different things there just to discuss. So first of all, in terms of these new antiviral drugs, yes, they'd be really very useful in those situations because it's what we call a small molecule. It can be synthesized, made by sort of traditional chemical means.
Yes.
Already, I think Pfizer, they've indicated, and hopefully this will translate into meaningful action, but that they're looking at, you know, offering this. It could be quite expensive, Eamon. I've seen sort of reports that it's going to be like about €700 per, you know, per dose or per regimen. But they said they will have a tiered pricing system based on the ability of the country to pay.
Yes.
And then they're looking at, for example, you know, maybe contracts with generic manufacturers. So something like that would be good. But I think globally as well, Eamon, not to say even with these antiviral drugs, I think it's really, really important in terms of making vaccines available, you know, on an equitable but also on a timely basis globally. And that just hasn't happened so far. I saw a figure last week, Eamon, that showed that in the last 3 months alone, high-income countries, I think they've given as many boosters as low-income countries have given vaccines from the very start.
Yes.
Of the vaccines becoming available.
Yes.
So something like that is really, really striking. So now there was an organization, an alliance set up called COVAX that was designed for equitable distribution.
Yes.
And again, you know, countries, including our own, have signed up to this and are contributing to this. But ironically, we've ended up with situations where, you know, countries, the high-income countries, the rich countries, are competing with COVAX for getting supplies in a very timely way. So that now, are we looking at situations where we're going to prioritize boosters over the availability,
yes,
of these vaccines for countries that have had very low uptake? So my view on that, Eamon, is certainly booster programs here, enormous value, especially in terms of targeting groups like older people, those with underlying conditions. I think it's going to be very difficult. I think it's difficult, Eamon, to justify a mass booster program. A mass booster program will work in terms of certainly reducing the cases. But I think in younger age groups especially, a mass booster program will have relatively modest effects on hospitalization. The reason being that the existing vaccines are doing a really good job in those cases. So until I saw a situation where you were seeing large number of these breakthrough infections in young people,
yes,
translating into hospitalizations, I think it's difficult to make the case. This is just my own personal view, and I think it's difficult to make the case for a mass,
yes,
booster program. Targeted one that we're doing, absolutely, fully agree with that. But I think in terms of looking at the effectiveness, if you're looking at the availability of vaccines, the most effective way to use an available vaccine is to give it to somebody who has not been vaccinated. Because in these countries, you have older people,
yes,
vulnerable people, that if they don't get the vaccine, there's quite a significant risk that they're going to die. So in those situations, I think, you know, so there's a discussion to be had there, Eamon, and unfortunately, it has to be done very quickly because this Delta variant, you know, as it begins and it reaches other countries, you know, it's going to wreak havoc.
Yes, and we must bear in mind that there's a figure out this morning that 92% of people over 12 years of age in this country have been vaccinated, which is an extraordinary number, and probably the most of any developed country. Just a final question, Professor Moyna, about the vaccination of 5 to 12-year-olds and your view on that. I think the Americans now have given the green light for that, but I'm not sure. But I do know that people with children in that age group, and indeed teachers and teachers' unions, are very concerned about that cohort of people.
Yes, you're right, Eamon. It has been approved in the US. It was approved, I think, last week by the FDA Advisory Committee, came out and voted unanimously in favour that it would be offered to 5 to 11-year-olds. So in terms of why would you give it? So, and again, I've heard a number of the people on that advisory panel, and the basis for their decision was that rather than basing it on does this actually suppress transmission and would it have value for the entire society, the basis for their decision was, is actually beneficial for children?
Yes.
So you have to begin to look at the risk and what is the risk from COVID. The risk for COVID, thankfully for children, is much less than for adults.
Right.
Tends to be a very mild disease, if any, in children. But there are some cases, Eamon, there are some cases you end up with these multi system inflammatory disorders, which can be very serious. And in the US, I think the numbers I've seen is up to 500-600 children have died. So it's not a situation where children, so there is a risk there. And certainly there is protection there to be offered from the vaccine. There was initial concern that some of the side effects, potentially in younger people especially, there was this side effect of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart.
Yes.
We've seen it where, you know, initially it was observed in the Israeli army, where you had young, very active, young men and adolescent boys, where the incidence of this could be as high as maybe 1 in 6,000. So it was significant. And initially, when we began to administer the vaccine here in Ireland for the 12 to 15-year-olds, I was wondering if that incidence would actually increase. And if anything, it probably decreased. And if anything, Eamon, it's probably going to decrease even more in terms of the 5 to 11-year-olds. Because if you look at these conditions like myocarditis, they tend to be present more highly with other viral infections at post-pubertal stages, whereas
right.
in the so the side effects are less in terms of probability are less likely to be there. So DMA is currently looking at this in terms of, I think, for the Pfizer vaccine. So I think with time, I would expect that it's probably going to be approved here in Europe, and then there would be a decision to be made by the HPRA and NIAC here for the Irish government then to take. My sense is it probably will be offered over time, Eamon. That would be my sense, what's going to happen, and it'll be offered to parents of those children.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Professor Minan. That's Professor Paul Minan from Maynooth University, a rock of common sense, and very, very good of Professor Minan to join us on the stand with that priceless information. Thank you very much, Professor Minan. Thanks to all of you who listened. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.